Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome to another Banking Reinvented episode, everyone. Welcome back. This is your host, Tim Rutten, indeed. And today, I'm once more being joined by Karan Oberoi.
Thanks for having me on your podcast, Tim.
Karan, welcome back. It's a delight. Today, we're going to be continuing our dialogue on next-generation customer servicing, at least talking about the full servicing domain and capabilities of a typical bank. Before we do so, this week in the news.
This week has been quite interesting. There hasn't been so many new product launches or updates, but I think what actually made me think a lot about was the fact that almost every bank, every major bank, especially in the US and other parts of the world, is reporting market beating estimates or results in their quarterly updates. And that's actually encouraging for the industry. It's nice to see that banks are doing better than what the market thought they would be, how they would be. So that's really nice to see. And the call to action here would be, don't forget that even if you're doing well, it's always great to think about productivity. And I guess that's a link to the topic we're going to talk about today.
That's a nice link for the topic of today, indeed. Was there also a bit of a highlight on why they were able to beat the expectation of the market?
It's quite interesting to see many banks, every bank has a different sort of reason. I think probably there's underlying reasons around interest rates, etc. But I was recently just reading a couple of hours ago, Bank of America announced theirs. And that was a lot. That was around investment fees. It was around investment banking. So there's different pockets, but overall, somehow every bank has managed to beat expectations. So that's really good.
Now, for today's conversation, we're actually continuing the dialogue also from the past episodes where we spoke about the best of suite perspective, bringing everything together holistically on the platform, which then allows you to not just serve the customer better by self-servicing, meaning they have really wonderful applications to do whatever they need to do in their daily lives, but also focus on the employee perspective where they literally have a very well-working, let's say 360 dashboard cockpit style workspace where they can really service the customer actively when the moment is right. We also talked about right channeling in that episode. I think there's a lot of really cool concepts there. For today, we're going to focus specifically on the servicing part. And perhaps we can look at it broadly first. What is servicing in our domain? How would you describe it, Karan?
I think great question, Tim, to start it off. Customer servicing has been, if you look at it from a customer's perspective, so before we even go to the bank or employee side, I think from a customer's perspective, it's quite simple. It's about I'm working or I'm doing my financial or non-financial transactions with a bank. How can I easily do all of my daily activities? So all of my daily financial activities, how can I carry them out with my bank? So I can do it digitally, or if I need help, I can get that help, right? That's how they look at it. I think from a bank's perspective, it's about, again, being customer first. It's about helping those customers. But how do you support them at any given channel, any given moment, in any different way that they would expect you to? So if they walk into a branch, they get the same service. If they call you on a call center, you get the same service. If they open your banking app, they get the same kind of experience and service, and they feel that you've supported them on their journey. So in its most basic sense, that's what customer servicing is for us.
Is there also a connect here to the, let's say, reality check that with the first wave of digitizing banking, that servicing has been completely, let's say, automated or pushed into standard forms that you had to fill out or standard servicing models that are now supposedly landing into a mobile application. Meaning on paper, it's a nice, efficient way of allowing your customer to self-serve or maybe even lowering the impact of the branch, allowing you to maybe remove a few branches from your total ecosystem. But there's this element which I pretty consistently hear in the market and in the conversations that I'm having that the human aspect is perhaps not fully gone, but it's diminished. Does that resonate with you if I share it like that?
I think absolutely. I think if you look back at the history again, right? So I think clients or customers were used to walking into a branch. The branch managers would know them, their families. They would have a conversation. So that it was very intimate, their relationship. I think as banks went digital, it became more challenging because they couldn't have the same level of intimacy in their digital channels. But it became even worse on the servicing side. So if a customer needed additional help or support, maybe there was a fraud case, maybe there was a challenge with a payment, or they just needed support in carrying out an on-behalf action, etc. all of those became really challenging to mimic the same intimacy in a digital world, because also banks had to be more careful with their with the investments they have there, with being more efficient in their operations. So they wanted to balance out the intimacy versus the cost to serve those clients. And by focusing on cost to serve too much, probably in some cases, they've gone in this other extreme where clients or end users find it difficult to have the same level of support that they would have had before in the branch.
So in that sense, it went a bit too extreme, a bit too digitized, and there's actually there's still a perspective where the human connect is differentiating perhaps.
100% again, because if you think of it, clients have to go through, they've gone through this journey where they get support in one channel or the other channel, but on the if you look at it from the employee's lenses, the bank employee that's trying to support them, they're also trying to figure out their way through hundreds of different solutions sometimes, or different disconnected systems, and they need to find out, how can I help this customer? So the willingness is there to help, but they're unable to help them often in a short time, because there's just too many challenges, and that leads to a negative customer experience. So if a bank was to really learn from some of the industry leaders, and it may be within banking, but could also be outside of banking, where you get quick support, you get instant support, that whole value chain is basically optimized. So it's not just, do I support or service my customers in the right channels? It's also, how do I make sure that my employees are enabled to service them? They have the right tools, and they can be effective. The willingness is there, but how do you help them be effective in supporting the customers? And I think that can be a real differentiator for banks, absolutely.
Now, we specifically didn't prepare this part, which is also free-flowing conversation, but just out of curiosity, if you think about next-level customer servicing, what type of brands or examples come to your mind where you feel this brand, that is a level of ambition that also we should have in banking?
I think the typical one, probably a bit of a cliche, but it's the Apple Genius Bar, right? You can walk into an Apple store. If you have a problem, there's someone that's going to help you. It's very casual. It's very informal, but it is effective in the way you get your service and your support. Other examples, probably from hotel chains like Four Seasons, you're going to be pampered by the staff. They have the ability to serve you, to help you with whatever you're looking for as you go and stay with them. And that's usually why you would develop a certain kind of intimacy with brands like those.
Yeah, and a certain level of loyalty, I would assume. Because basically what those brands are doing, and these are just two casual examples, is they wow you at every step of the experience. And if something even goes wrong, maybe a room is double booked or something is not available for you, or they cannot service you in a particular setting, they probably go above and beyond to correct that situation, making you even more loyal. And that's basically what these types of brands are known for. And I think that inspiration we can also bring into banking, which of course you need certain tooling and certain capability for. But I think mostly it's also that customer centricity to make that important and to have that within your fabric. Okay, so moving on, Karan, bringing this back to execution, what are the top challenges that we see in the typical banks that we work with to actually really service our customers? What's holding them back, if I may?
I would start with, let's start from the employee side. I think from a bank employee, I mentioned a few things before. They are not enabled at this moment often to be able to easily serve their clients, which basically translates to they don't have a customer 360. They have lack of customer insights. They're not able to figure out if a client asks for a certain support. They have to go through multiple different systems, solutions, and processes to be able to give them a quick answer. So that time to resolution is much longer than a client would expect. And that's usually not helping most of the servicing aspects. If you look at the operations itself, it's a very manual, labor-intensive operation, right? So from a customer support perspective, customer servicing perspective, you need a lot of employees to support all kinds of queries coming through all different channels. Banks have, in the meantime, started supporting their clients in a branch, in a contact center, on WhatsApp, on Facebook, could be any different channel. And ideally, you want to make sure that all of those conversations happen in an aligned way, but also you want to lower your cost to serve and not keep increasing them, because the number of channels to communicate with you start increasing more and more. So I think there's definitely an efficiency play there for banks to think of, while at the same time making sure they can actually drive up the customer intimacy that we were speaking about. I think if I would now look at it from the lens of an average consumer, for them, it doesn't feel human. We spoke about it. Customer servicing is really not resonating with them. They feel like they're always struggling to get the kind of answers they want or get, right? So that's a challenge. We've also got, let's say, millennials that are perfectly happy to stay in a self-service world. They actually don't want to talk to anyone at most times. But there's always a moment in their life cycle where they will need that help. So again, fraud is a typical one, which is usually that negative moment where you need support and you want to feel like there's someone to back you. It's all about trust in banking. And if that trust, if you want to protect that trust, you need to make sure that you can really support them in the best possible way.
Building on top of that, I'm hearing there are technology silos within the bank. Typically, there are different systems. They're not per se well integrated. So for a typical employee to service you as an individual customer, Karan, they're looking at multiple screens to get the view, right? That takes time. It is basically friction in a way. I also hear there's a lot of manual operations. I hear of institutions that are literally ran on a spreadsheet. Not sharing any names here, of course, but you do see that there are older patterns still within these organizations that they just work. Why fix it if it ain't broken? I think that pattern we typically recognize. Why you would do this is driving the time to resolution down, driving your cost to service down, improve the loyalty, improve the retention towards you as an overall brand, but also wowing them on the moments that matter, if that makes sense, right? I think that's really where you can stand out. And connecting it to the previous part in the episode, we basically spoke about the fact that it's been less human over time. And I think there are very impactful moments where I prefer the self-servicing model personally as well, but there's also a moment where I just need to speak to an individual because it's high value or it's highly important to me or I'm just in a situation. I think that model combined, that you can progressively go through the channel mix as you have a need, yeah, I believe that there's a lot of merit in exploring that model a bit further. But before we do, maybe one thing to add into the mix, this is very much also the part where AI is typically coined. What is your perspective on AI in the mix of servicing? Couldn't we just drop all the human parts here or the human interactions here and make them AI driven?
I'll ask you a question, Tim. How often have you enjoyed your interaction with an AI bot from any of your service providers? Yeah. Right? I've barely seen anyone enjoy that experience so far. But I'd love to hear your opinions if you've ever found one that actually worked for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It is improving. I think it's really improving quite rapidly. Yeah. I'm actually comfortable talking initially to an AI chatbot that hears me out, does the initial level setting of what is this individual looking for. And if that can already lead to the answer, which actually yesterday happened with one of my mobile phone providers, I was actually positively surprised. I wanted to renew, get a new phone, and I wanted something else. And it actually got it, like it tackled it, and I didn't need to speak to a human. But those are just tactical examples. Yeah. I think there it's very obvious and it is already there. Where it is non-obvious is when you have a few more complicated use cases where you need help. Yeah. For example, if you want to understand the opportunity you have to get a mortgage for a new house, no way I'm doing that with a chatbot and I'm going to trust it. At least that's my individual take. But let me put it this way. I think we're in 3 months or 6 months, we're going to have a different conversation because the implementation of AI in these chatbot contexts, they're going to be real agents that are able to support you and drive to decisions. They're going to be there.
No, fully agree again. And that's actually the angle I wanted to also explore together with you. Chatbots have been around for a while, and I think they were almost the first iteration in the servicing domain that we saw being effectively or extensively used by banks. The challenge with that has been the early versions were very weak. The answers were, again, completely not human-like. It's ironic, obviously. But what we'd love to see here is how can we apply this technology or the new technology that, you know, whether it's ChatGPT or any of its similar variants, where the conversations can be a lot more human-like. And I think that helps because the most important aspect in exactly what you said is the bot to understand your context. Why are you reaching out? What exactly is it that you want to do instead of just trying to repeat what might be written down in a knowledge base? And that's the part we need to solve or we would love to see. So for sure, that would be one of the common use cases of AI in the customer servicing domains. But if you go a bit broader, actually, what gets me most excited, and probably we've seen quite a few of those announcements also coming on from different vendors or different providers in the space, is around agentic platforms or using AI micro agents or agents. So really AI-based so-called agents that really take on small little tasks in that whole value chain instead of trying to do it all, right? So it's not just about the conversation, but it's about how do you identify different little micro moments in that entire cycle of trying to support your customers, and you try to automate as much as you can. So the AI is essentially helping it out. In some cases, it can be fully automated. In some cases, assisting the human in getting it done. So your human agents and your AI agents working together. But the idea is that the more use cases or the more moments you can automate or replace with AI agents, the lower your cost to serve eventually, the more effective you might be, because AI can quickly decipher or understand the context better than a human agent often, because it can capture and understand a lot of the data, the underlying data quickly. So applying that in your operations would probably be the game changer and excites me the most in this space.
So the game changer of AI here is not the classic model that we're familiar with over the past few years. There's been chatbots and what have you, and now we have LLMs and ChatGPT and what have you. But I think the newer view on this is there can be smaller AI agents that each have their own domain that they can function in. They can also cross-collaborate depending on the ask, which for internal employee productivity is going to be step change, like major change, but also certainly towards the end user, it's going to help them as well in many different flavors, if I may. Now, bringing it back to how to make progress as a bank to get to a servicing model that's this seamless or gives them the capability to say, we have self-servicing, we have AI-assisted servicing, we have human-assisted servicing, and you gradually move through that depending on the situation. What needs to hold true for making that happen? What do they need to have in place as a bank to unlock that type of capability?
I think it comes down to first unifying your data, right? Your systems, your data. I think getting them on a single, or at least supported by a single platform, so you can really leverage all of your underlying data for your agents in the future or your AI applications to understand the context, right? That it all comes down to, can I actually decipher the data that exists? I think in most of our conversations in the past, we've typically seen that, I would say primarily banks around the world still have a struggle with all of that siloed data and systems. They need to figure out how do they bring this together, because the sooner you can do that, the sooner you can leverage it towards AI. Otherwise, AI will also be just yet another silo, and it'll only have a certain set of information, but it can't really capture all of the valuable data that you do have today already in your domain, but you just need to unify and bring it. So for sure, that is absolutely one of the biggest elements in my view that is required for banks. I think next to that, nothing holds them at this moment to start making a stronger push, being more aggressive in this space in optimizing their employee operations.
Yeah, just to build on top of that, in one of the other episodes, also with Thomas Foos, as well as with Chris Chayan, our CTO, respectively, our head of AI. Interestingly enough, they also shared that there's a bit more of a progressive way of building AI capabilities by saying, what is the use case? And then reason back, what data points do we need to actually fire up the AI capability? Meaning, let's not mistake unifying the data with, we first need to take a year, maybe two, to build a data lakehouse capability. No, feel free to do, but there's an alternative where you say, outside in, what is the use case? What data do we need? Let's unify that particular set of data points, bring that to the AI capability, and then fire it up end to end. And parallel, you can do that for multiple other AI use cases. But effectively, it also breaks down the, you need to do a lot of work before you get the value out of it. I just wanted to add this perspective because it makes it maybe a bit more pragmatic, perhaps.
No, I think that's a really good point as well. If you look at what banks need to do today, I don't want to suggest that you can only leverage AI if you unify all your data and systems. I fully recognize the fact that there's steps you need to take before you can get there. I think the point I wanted to make was you will only be able to leverage it to the best of its abilities if you can get that right. Yeah. Of course, you can start embedding. We spoke about the micro AI agents or AI agents. You can start doing that also in little bits and pieces. You can also start just improving on some of those elements in the value chain. But you will not get the same kind of benefits if you don't have a strong vision of getting to that unified data model of being able to apply this in the best possible way with all of the context available in your banking ecosystem today.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I fully agree. Moving on, real world use cases. So we now talked about what is happening in a servicing space, what does great look like, what's the expectation effectively of the end user. We spoke about how does AI play into this and what type of value can that create when done well. What are the challenges in getting there? Let's now move to a few real world cases in, let's say, retail banking or small medium business banking. Anything that comes to mind where you say, hey, today this is already possible and this is what we're seeing having impact in the field.
I think especially for retail and maybe even part of the SME world, the self-service chatbots, like we said, they're improving, they can be leveraged. Mm-hmm. The ability to provide next best actions also for users, being able to surface up challenges based on their data that you already know they might reach out to you for. So if you suspect fraud, How do you actually give the right nudge to the user to take certain actions instead of requiring the need to call you, right? Or actually having to initiate that conversation with you. So making it more proactive as a bank. Thinking of, again, the AI micro agents, improving different bits and pieces in that value chain, also for the retail banking side. But where it gets more interesting long-term, I think, is also on the commercial banking and private banking side. I think there's probably still a bit of this this conversation around, well, that is more human relationship-centric, right? So it's always been that relationship-centric banking. So there, how do we leverage AI to optimize? And you can already see quite a few real-world use cases where, again, for your relationship managers, there's tons of productivity boosts, improvements. Again, in smart actions, intelligent actions, next best actions popping up for them, giving them more tools and ability to provide upsell or servicing capabilities towards their end users that they are serving, giving them insights so they can upsell, they can provide digital advice in the best possible way. So there's quite a few use cases we are seeing also in that domain.
We started the conversation with the fact that banks are totally outperforming the market expectation at this point. So why move now? This all sounds nice. It's probably a better version of than what they might have available today. But what would you say is the main trigger to say, hey, let's do it right now instead of waiting for a few years to move to a similar model like we're discussing here?
Banks have been blessed to have deep pockets, right? I think that's something that is always interesting. But I do feel most of the banks I speak to, most of the C-level execs we've spoken to in the last months, they all point out to the same challenges. They do want to improve this because they can see a real business case for this. So banks are burning billions, millions, depending on the size and scale at this moment due to loss of productivity, due to very high cost to serve. And if you look at the neobanks out there, if you look at the challenger banks out there, many of them have, if you look at Nubank, for example, the cost to serve customers is at a completely different scale than what a typical traditional bank has. And if you take a long-term horizon, you can maybe prolong or delay a bit of that conversation for a few more months. But at some stage, at some point, you will come to that conclusion that there is a need for you to take stronger action to be competitive to others in the market who are also at least eating into some of the market share. So I would say the urgency is absolutely there, even if you're performing well at this moment.
Yeah, maybe to add to that as well, there's this Accenture report on the effects of fragmented channels, which is clearly what we're discussing here. And it basically states as one of the data points that 44% of the consumers that are in the age bracket of 18 and 44, so that population, have had difficulty getting human support when they needed it. So as much as it is beautiful in your P&L to have this self-servicing model with little branches and little human interactions, optimizing your cost to serve, and bringing AI into the play will make it even better, there is still the human connect that is needed at certain moments in time to really have the impact. Positively, first of all, to remediate whatever situation is there, but second of all, to also generate loyalty and potentially create up and cross-sell opportunities, especially when you speak to commercial banking contexts and private banking contexts, very relationship heavy. And yeah, without that human touch or that human connect on the moments that matter, you're just not going to be able to capture that opportunity. I think that also really plays into the points that you are raising. Now, moving to the key takeaways, Kellen, I think it's hard to ignore that servicing is the part where a bank needs to stand out, right? Across all the flavors that are there, whether it's the self-servicing capabilities, which needs to be seamless, whether it's the AI-powered servicing, which is becoming smarter and way more embedded into the experience, helping me in my daily life, like actively and proactively, and still having the human assist at the moments that matter. I think those three concepts to me just really, they hit it home in a way. Like those three elements you need to have in the mix properly. Of course, in a model where it makes sense for unit economics, right? So there, like we discussed in a previous episode, how do you do right channeling in a way that makes sense for your business model so that you can help the consumer properly, whether it's a retail consumer, small, medium business, commercial, or private banking? We talked about the fact that the challenge that needs to be tackled if you're working in a traditional bank, you're faced with all these different systems where you basically need to go through and to service the customer. There's a lot of manual operations because of it. There are still Excel sheets. Like, that will not sustain into the future. So you need to actually make a move, especially when you're in a position to do so. The funds are there right now. You're running a healthy P&L, a healthy business. So it's probably the best moment in time to push for change, right? I think that was also the call to action you mentioned. I think time to resolution, lowering your cost to serve, generating cross and upsell, those are all the mechanics that I think any boardroom can get excited about. But for that, you also need to have the foundations in place. And foundationally, you said unify your data, unify your integrations into an engagement layer so that you can indeed have all of these servicing models available, either self-servicing, AI-assisted, or human-powered. And if you do it at all well with a strong vision, you're going to be able to position yourself for, let's say a future-proof competitive set against the rest in the market. So I think it's more of an invitation to think big, if that makes sense. I think there's great examples already out there of these different servicing models and what they look like. We also discussed the different, let's say, examples of Four Seasons or the Apple Genius Bar, where you can clearly tell, aha, that is the wow factor. That is really helping me when it matters. And I think that's definitely where in banking we have some work to do.
No, for sure, Tim. I think maybe one thing I'd love to add is I recently shared this in one of my presentations as well. Something that always inspired me was a quote from Richard Branson on really talking about how do you also think about your employees, right? So if you think, if as a bank, you're thinking about how do I give my employees the best tools to serve their customers, to serve your customers in the best possible way, don't underestimate the fact that all your employees will be happy. And if your employees are happy, they can serve their customers with a smile, which means your customers will be happy. And if your customers are happy, your shareholders will always win, right? So I do think that plays a relevance here. So for banks, you should also factor in how is your employee at this moment enabled in the best possible way to serve your clients.
Exactly. All right. With that, we're going to wrap up for today. Thanks, Karan, for joining me in the studio. And see you in the next episode.
Great. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.